Klein, and this is TS Radio. You're going to have to kind of bear with me today. I've got a heck of a cold running here, and so I'm not my usual tip-top self. But anyway, we have a good show for you here today, and we're continuing on with our exposés on the use of Agent Orange during Vietnam and the ongoing effects from this that the veterans are suffering, many of whom are not being compensated or they're being ignored by the VA, the efforts to get glioblastoma, which seems to be at an epidemic among these veterans, listed on the presumptive list of known adverse reactions to the use of dioxin, other chemicals in there also, but dioxin being the major component, are ongoing. Now, one of the things I want to touch on briefly here is that since I started doing these shows, I've started doing research specifically on dioxin and what they're saying about it, and having dealt with it with genetically modified foods and the herbicides and pesticides that are loaded with glyphosate, dioxin being a major component of these chemicals. I have to wonder what is going on here. I am aware that heat causes the toxicity of dioxin to increase exponentially. So this brings to mind so many questions. I guess you'd have to be me to know how my mind works. It's going all over the place. I can see the fingers on this reaching out into many areas. But what we're going to be talking about today is what's called the Brown Water Navy, and this is through Blue Water Navy's Veterans Association. And our guest today, we have one we're waiting on, Commander Wells, but with us already is Susie Ballinger. Susie, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on the show. I also want to tell you that he should be on soon. I just got a text from him. So if you could, Marty, send him the number real quick. He said he was trying to call in.
The call-in number is 917-388-4520. And right now I'm unable to do anything other than run this
board.
Wait
a minute. I'm going to do it to him right now.
Okay. All right.
Evidently he is trying to call in.
Oh, excellent.
I'll text him real fast, and then I can
okay,
go forward.
I think I got him.
Oh, good. Okay, got it.
Commander Wells. Yes.
Hi.
There you
can
are.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Conflict there. I thought you were calling me. And,
now
I see I'm supposed to call you.
Yeah.
We're okay.
Thank you. Yep. Good. So, Susie, we were just getting into this. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Can I start,
Susie,
please?
Usually keeps me all kinds of, you know, on track and so on and so
I did.
Forth. So.
I just sent him a text anyway. But let me start the program here. I'm Susie Ballinger from Blue Water Navy Association and also the Military Veterans Advocacy. Our retired Commander John Wells is the Executive Director of MVA Inc. as well. He's been a very important person in trying to get the Blue Water Navy veterans their benefits. He goes to D.C. Several times a year trying to get these veterans on board. And what we'll do is, this isn't going to be like the presidential debate where we're talking over one another.
thank goodness.
Thank goodness for that. So I will say what I have to say, and I'm going to turn it over to John to give details, if that's okay.
Okay. Before you start, John, somebody's got something running there in the background. We're picking it up on the mic. And if you could turn down any TVs, computers, radios, whatever you got going, it would help. And tone things down there. But other than that, go ahead, Commander Wells.
Okay, well, I think Susie was going to start it off, and usually
yes.
What happens is she talks and I listen. I work for her, so.
Oh, well. All right, I got my itinerary here. Number one, let's just briefly say that the Blue Water Navy veterans, those are veterans in the Navy who served offshore in the harbors and the bays, who did not have boots on the ground, had their benefits for Agent Orange stripped from them in 2002. In 1991, they were included. So we're fighting to get to restore those benefits. So with that in mind, we decided to go to our congressmen and our senators to ask for help, because we were not getting anywhere with the VA in changing any rules. So I'm going to say the bill numbers, and John will touch base with a little bit about that. And, John,
okay.
if you don't have it, I have the numbers of co-sponsors. So those bill numbers are S-681 in the Senate and H-R-969 in the House. So, John, you can take over now on the bill.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Basically, you know, this is a real hard concept for the VA to get their arms around. The Agent Orange was mixed with petroleum. They did that. It was actually diesel fuel because it helped the Agent Orange adhere to the plant life. But petroleum floats, and it gets washed into the rivers. Plus, we sprayed the rivers and the streams, and all of this would eventually come out to the South China Sea. The ships that were operating in the bays and the harbors and the territorial seas of Vietnam all used a evaporation distillation process to convert the salt water into drinking water and water for the boilers. Well, this Agent Orange would go right into the system and would eventually contaminate the entire system, and these guys were getting a straight shot of Agent Orange into the potable water. Now, they use it for drinking, and don't forget, this is the tropics, so, you know, they're going to hydrate more than perhaps usual. They use it for showering, for food preparation, their laundry. Everything was done in a common laundry. And, you know, the Australians, who actually took the lead on this, found that there was a higher cancer incidence among Navy folks who never set foot ashore than there was against the guys that were actually fighting, you know, in country. So, and by the way, the CDC did a similar study on non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and found the same thing. So, you know, the Australians have been granting the benefits on this since about 2003. Well, and it was actually the Australians who did the distillation study, and they found that not only was the dioxin not removed, it was actually enriched. Now, two separate committees of the United States Institute of Medicine have verified this. Okay, one of them, they went through the math and went through the science and said, yep, that looks pretty good. And the other one actually replicated everything and refigured it. And they found the only mistake that the Australians made was they thought there was an enrichment factor of 4, and in fact, the enrichment factor was about 10. So, you know, it became pretty evident why we were having a higher incidence of cancer among the Navy folks. Well, the VA has just been doggone set against this. You know, there's reasons why we sometimes call them the Department of Veterans Abuse. And they just out and out refused to back down. I briefed the chief of staff, a guy by the name of John Gingrich, in January of 2012. Thought I had him convinced. And 11 months later, they said, nope, we're not going to change our minds. So we went back to Congress and the courts. In April of 2015, the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims came out in a decision called Gray versus McDonald and said VA excluding the bays and the harbors is just out and out irrational. And they ordered them to redo their regulation. Well, in support of that, I met twice with the Deputy VA Secretary, Sloan Gibson, and he seemed to be, you know, on board with it. In fact, he said, you know, gee, we're leaning very closely to your views. And that's an exact quote. This year in February, they came back out, stabbed us right in the back, and doubled down on the original policy. So we now have a court suit that asks for judicial review of that policy. Briefing is ongoing. And our hope is that the court will come out and agree with us that the VA policy is irrational and order them to include at least the bays and the harbors, which will cover most of the folks. There's still going to be some folks that need to be covered, but that will certainly make the legislation a lot easier. Now, with the bills, we have 336 co-sponsors in the House and 46 in the Senate, I believe.
Right.
And, you know, we're, you know, a lot of progress. I mean, Susie schedules me to go up to Washington more often than I really want to be there just to go around and meet with everybody. And actually, we've met with every office except one guy who just doesn't want to see us and everybody on the Senate side. So, you know, they know who we are. They've listened to it. And we have a lot of support. The problem is there was a law passed in 2010. They call it the Pay-As-You-Go Act, which says if you do new spending, you have to actually find some sort of offset. And there's not that much left in the VA claimancy, because what we don't want to do is take away somebody else's benefits to fund this. So we've been fighting that issue and for really most of this year and trying to come up with a way to pay for the bill. Now, the law requires a scoring by the Congressional Budget Office, or CBO, and I met with them about a year ago, a little more than that now, probably about a year and a half ago. And originally, they had said that the 10-year cost of the bill would be $2.74 billion. Well, after that meeting, you know, we convinced them that they had some wrong assumptions, and they brought the expected score down to $1.1 billion over 10 years. So we almost cut it by about 60%. But it's still a lot of money. So one of the things we're doing now is trying to adopt a sense of the Congress resolution. And this sense of the Congress resolution says that it was the original intent of the Agent Orange Act of 1991 that the bays, harbors, and territorial seas would be covered, and asks the VA to again review their policy. Now, that is non-binding, but it does express the sense of the Congress, and it's certainly something we'd be raising at the court, you know, to show what Congress's original intent was. Now, the Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa was one of the sponsors on the original Agent Orange Act in 1991, so he knows what the intent was, and he introduced the resolution for us in the Senate. And Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, who happens to be Susie's congresswoman, you know, introduced it in the House. Congresswoman Stefanik says that she, too, works for Susie Bellinger. I think we all work for Susie Bellinger. But that's a good thing, because she's really gotten it, brought this thing up from nothing. You know, nobody was aware of this until Susie took the stand and said, this isn't right. And then, you know, she's got the entire Congress aware of it. She sends frequent emails, which are lovingly known on the Hill as Susie Grahams. She drafted me into this thing, and you know, it used to be I'd go to Washington maybe once every 3 or 4 months, and she just asked me to spend another couple of days, then it became spend the rest of the week, then it became you're going up there, don't care if you got a case or not. So, you know,
I also recruited John Rossi, who you will hear from pretty soon, too. I recruited John.
Okay.
She recruited
Commander,
everybody.
Yeah, I have
pretty good social media network now.
Yeah, I have a personal interest in this, and I've told Susie about this. My younger brother died in February 2nd of 2001. He was a gunner's mate on the USS Intrepid, and he died of multiple cancers. One they could identify, three they said were distinctly different, but they were cancers, but previously unknown to them. He died with tumors all over him, and the VA would not take him in. They at one point removed his name. I was a novice on the computer at the time, but when I found his name on the roster for the Intrepid, I had copied it off, which is the only thing that saved me. They even turned around and said he never was in the Navy. And I shot him a copy of this, and they put his – I said, you've got about 15 minutes to get his name put back on that roster. And I said, and I have pictures of him standing on the deck of the Intrepid with the commander. And I said, so don't tell me when there. But
that was the same ship my husband was on, Marty.
Yes, he sent me letters during that time, and they were part of an embargo over there. USS Intrepid, the New York, and one other ship that I can't remember the name of. But he wrote me letters from over there. Of last night, our jets came over and sprayed us again. We're having to scrub the decks and the guns. Everybody's sick. And when he got out of the Navy, I asked him, did they ever tell you why they were spraying you? And he said, yeah, they said it was to keep us from getting parasites.
But that's typical of the VA, and I'm so sorry to hear about your brother, but it's they will just deny. I mean, they're denying the laws of nature, for gosh sakes. Like I say, petroleum floats, rivers run out to sea,
and John,
they just refuse
to
acknowledge it.
John, also, I've got a lot of the things we were going to talk about crossed off because you've targeted them already. But could you add two to that while you're on the reports, the Natrang Harbor report and the Crab and Lobster report? Those two go hand in hand with the reports too. So if you could explain those two.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say next, Susie. But she keeps me under control and keeps me on track. Okay.
Okay.
The Russians were called into Nha Trang in the 90s to try to figure out why the coral was dying. They took bottom samples, and in the various testing, they found toxic levels of dioxin, both in the Cave River, which discharges into the harbor, okay, and in the harbor itself. And this is 20 years after the war. In Da Nang Harbor, there is, which is where most of the planes were stationed. There are drainage canals that run from the airfield all the way out into the harbor. And in fact, you know, that as they washed the planes down, all that stuff would come right back out into the harbor. Plus, we had water barges that would replenish the water supply on board the anchored ships. They would pick them up from a connection that ran from a place called Monkey Mountain. It was an open reservoir that was often sprayed. So, I mean, these guys just didn't have a chance. They were getting water every which way. And it's unfortunate that the VA just has just dug their heels in and refuses to do this. I know we've got support from virtually every veterans organization, the Military Coalition, the Legion, everybody. And they just out and out, you know, refuse to even discuss it. So,
gee, many Christmas.
We keep fighting, and we're fighting in Congress. We're fighting in court. You know, I just asked them, the VA to do rulemaking based on Nha Trang Harbor and Da Nang Harbor. I doubt they'll do it, but, you know, at least we keep pushing the issue. But the thing is, you know, all of us, we're all volunteers, but we believe in what we're doing, okay? Susie is a volunteer, and she'll spend 6 to 8 hours a day or more sometime when she's setting up appointments, you know, doing this. John Rossi out in Colorado has spent, you know, years trying to get this passed, and I've done a few things myself. So, you know, we try to...
We have Carol Olzanecki is from New York State.
Carol,
she is
too?
A wonder. She's my partner in crime, especially when it comes to the widows of Vietnam
yes.
veterans. She helps out with that.
And there's a guy by him, you know, Mike Yates runs a Facebook page called Blue Water Navy Awareness. Mike Evictus has been very helpful in getting members of Congress to sign on and marshaling people to call and remind members of Congress that we're still around. I mean, it's I had a meeting with Congressman Jeff Miller, who's chair of the Veterans Committee, a couple of weeks ago, and he said, you know, everywhere I go, I hear about you guys. So, you know, we are having some success. But it's a complete grassroots movement. And by the way, more information can be found at www.bluewaternavy.org and www.militaryveteransadvocacy.org. And at Military Veterans Advocacy, we also have a Facebook page where you can follow the kind of things we're doing.
John,
okay.
I need to go back to one thing to add to your discussion about the IOM reports. The IOM reports are reports that were was mandated by Congress to do an update every 2 years on any illnesses to be added. And we have met with those people at the IOM in person and at meetings. In 2008, it clearly stated that the Blue Water Navy veterans were not to be excluded. But then the VA charged them to do another report just on Blue Water Navy. And the 2011 report, it may sound a little negative, but this is my take on this. It says over and over again, there is not enough data. Well, there was no data. There was no data for the ground troops. Why would there be data if they didn't even know that this was dangerous? So they're not going to find any data. And it is a presumptive ruling for the ground troops because they cannot clearly say how much each veteran was exposed to. So they made it presumptive, and it needs to be made presumptive as well for the Navy.
Actually, the only thing we're asking is a return to what we had prior to 2002. But, you know, Susie raises a good point. And that Natrong Harbor report, we got it to the Institute of Medicine, the IOM, but we got it to them late. And we talked with the project manager, and she said, yeah, we cited in a footnote that it was there, but we had no time to really review it, and it didn't factor into our decision, which is a shame because it actually proved that the Agent Orange was there. Another thing is they dumped Agent Orange illegally into a river in New Jersey. And where'd it go? It went straight into the New York Bight. And they found, again, sample toxic levels in the river, okay, in the harbor, and all the way out in seafood, 150 nautical miles from shore. So you
my Lord.
That stuff didn't get out there.
Yeah.
Now, here's the other kicker for you. We just spent $84 million remediating the area around Da Nang Airport to remove the Agent Orange. What would happen is that stuff would stick in piles, and then it would rain, went right back into the rivers and into the harbors where the fish farms were. So we called FDA and said, do you test for the Agent Orange dioxin in seafood coming from Vietnam? Mm-hmm. No, we don't do that. Why would we do that? Well, you know, explain the remediation. Ah, that stuff's gone by now. Well, it's not. So our recommendation is if you go to a restaurant and want to order seafood, ask where it comes from. And in Vietnam, I hate to do something to the Vietnamese seafood industry, but it's the VA's fault, not mine. You know, it's we recommend lamb, steak, chork, chicken, pork, anything with seafood. Because we think that there is still Agent Orange dioxin and stuff that's coming into this country. And nobody in the federal government will test for it.
No, and I'll tell you why in a minute. John Rossi has rejoined us. And, John, you wanted to speak with the commander. Go ahead, please. You're live and on air.
Hi there. Yeah, I work for Susie Ballinger also. And I want to
Everybody does.
John, John is our executive director of Blue Water Navy, folks. He's a wonderful guy and works very hard. But he's got a good point to bring up.
Okay.
John, when you talked to Jeff Miller, I understand that he was wanting to understand the science of this better, and he wanted to test some of the ships that that have been mothballed from the Vietnam era. But in doing that, what he'd be doing is looking for dioxin on board the ships. And that would be essentially direct exposure, and we're not even in that category. We just need presumptive exposure. Can you tell me if that's the right way or not?
That's exactly right, John. And, you know, I tried to explain to Chairman Miller that the water systems were constantly flushed from the time the ships left Vietnamese waters, and some of those ships were in commission for 10, 12, 15 years afterwards. So any trace of the dioxin would eventually have been flushed out of the system. The Navy identified three carriers that possibly might have some dioxin aboard, and I told them that I didn't think so. For one thing, carriers very seldom came into the bays and harbors. And again, from the time they left, you know, everything would be flushed. So it's kind of a wild goose chase trying to find the dioxin there. Now, whether or not he's going to accept that at face value or not, I don't know. But I told him any naval engineer would have agreed with me. And you know, that brings up a good point and something I forgot to mention should have. I'm sitting there talking to Sloan Gibson, the deputy VA secretary. And I finally said, Mr. Secretary, I don't think that any of your people here that are on this project have any surface ship operational experience. And he looks up at me and says, I think you're right. You know, they got people making decisions on this thing who simply do not know what the heck they're talking about. You know, the presumption originally, what the Agent Orange Act says is service, air, land, or naval service in the Republic of Vietnam. By law, that includes the territorial seas, the bays, and the harbors. We recognize that in the 1954 Geneva Accords. We recognize that again in the 1973 Paris Peace Treaty. And we recognize it in a treaty that we signed and ratified back in 1958 on the Convention on the Territorial Seas and the Contiguous Zone. You know, the VA is, they're not only violating the laws of science, they're also violating the laws of man. And I probably gave you more information on that question than you wanted, John, but, you know, one of the issues with presumption is we don't know of any given molecule of water that at any one time, you know, contained Agent Orange, just like we don't know that any grain of sand on the beach contained the Agent Orange dioxin. It's just impossible to tell. It's been too long. That's why they did the Agent Orange presumption, is if you were air, land, or naval service in the Republic of Vietnam, you were presumed to have been exposed. I mean, it made a lot of sense. But here's the other kicker. The original act called for the VA to set up a registry and to conduct a blood test of everybody that signed up as a potential Agent Orange victim, okay? Air, land, sea, didn't matter. The VA refused to carry out that test. They had all kinds of reasons. Too expensive. Didn't want to do it. It's just junk science, this and that. And they fought fought it. So to the point where the half-life deterioration of the dioxin was below the, caused it to be below the detection threshold. And that happened probably about 10 or 12 years ago. If the VA had done what Congress told them to do in 1991, we wouldn't need to be talking about presumption. We'd know. You could just go get a blood test, or could have gotten a blood test.
Oh, John,
so
could I
basically,
add something?
We're in just half a second, boss. We are basically paying for the VA's incompetence. Okay.
Yes.
All right, boss, your turn.
Okay. On that same note about dioxin and half-life, I had a really good conversation with Mary Paxton about that because I wanted to understand it totally. The half-life.
Mary Paxton's with the IOM.
IOM, I'm sorry. But the half-life of dioxin in the body is around 7 to 11 years, and you can see that online. Now, let's just take an example. Suppose you have 100 nano, whatever they're called, in your body. I'm just making an example. So with that 100 units, or however you want to say it, it's going to take 7 to 11 years for that to leave this body. Now you're on your 11th year, we'll say. Now you've got 50 of them left. Another 7 to 11 years to get rid of the 50, and so on. So you understand that this dioxin stays in the system for a very long time in a human. On the land, in the soil, it can last, the half-life in the soil can be up to like 99 years.
Mm-hmm.
So
and we know that's the case because of the remediation in Da Nang.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's someone in the chat room, a fellow named Ed, has said that what data there is, this goes back to don't eat anything from Vietnam. What data there is in the Hatfield Group report, and he says the soil sample at Da Nang was 365 times the global standards, and at Ben Hoi, the soil sample is 1,000 times the global standards, and he said this is as of 2006 and 2007. That's from a gentleman named Ed Ball in the chat room.
Oh, yeah.
We know Ed well. He's a very good man, and he's helped us a lot.
Okay. All right.
Can I add one more thing? While I think of it, John, we've got a lot of what I had on my notes taken care of. It's going along pretty well. But there are other options, other ways for, especially we'll say, the carrier folks are exposed, and some of them have actually been, their cases, claims have been approved for this. We had all kinds of helicopters and CODs. CODs are planes that take the personnel back and forth from land to ship. In fact, my husband
They call them carrier
on
board delivery.
Carrier
on board delivery.
Yeah, and many of our sailors used those. They were back and forth to Vietnam, maybe getting supplies, going back to the ship, back and forth, but there's no record of that. That's one possibility. The other is handling from the helicopters the things that are coming back and forth, the products from Vietnam. That's another way they could have been exposed. Washing the ships. They wash the ships off all the time. That water is contaminated. Water is going right back into the water and sucked back in. The other thing is my husband even mentioned that many times they were on ration water and they had to take salt water baths, so salt water, six showers.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got other avenues, too, of contamination.
Right.
Sure. All the ships down in the main engineering spaces, you know, where you'd have lubricating oil leaks and so on and so forth, they would wash those areas down off the fire main, which was brought in salt water. All the toilets use salt water. But, you know, it even goes more than that. Da Nang was where the fleet post office was. The mailbags would sit out there either on the piers for a small boat or on the airfield for a helicopter or for the COD plane. All that stuff was great. And we're talking about canvas mailbags. They'd bring it aboard. The postal clerk would pick it up. The stuff would adhere to his fingers. And just like on fingerprints, when he dumped it and sorted the mail, that would all go on the envelope. So it's the oil that your skin gives off would absorb the dioxin and then transfer it. Same thing with what they call epithelial cells or skin cells. You know, every time you shake hands with somebody, you trade skin cells. Oh, it sounds yucky, right? But you do, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Every time you touch another person or touch something that another person has touched, you transfer skin cells. And all Agent Orange dioxin would adhere to the skin cells. There's a lot of ways that people could have been exposed, and yet the VA just refuses to acknowledge it.
And there isn't one report that refutes it. There isn't a report out there that says this did not occur.
Yeah, I mean, it's just unbelievable.
I'm telling you, listening to this, and I've done other shows on my whistleblower series on Thursday nights with a gentleman named Sean Higgins from Tennessee, and he was career military, retired from that, went to work for the government, decided to wind up his career at the VA hospital there in Memphis, and or Nashville. Anyway, this man has documented so much abuse of the veterans there, but I'm telling you, I'm so sick of hearing about this Veterans Administration and what's happening to these people and how these people sit at these damn desks and make these decisions about other people's lives, knowing they're lying. They know they're lying. They know they're doing the wrong thing. And yet, let this happen. This just infuriates me.
In 2013, the Congress did some hearings on burn pits. Burn pits were in Afghanistan and Iraq, and basically they just dig a hole in the ground, throw in everything in the world, plastic, bodies, carcasses from animals, human waste, medical waste, computers, furniture, anything. And then they just pour diesel oil on it and light it off. Well, guess what? The wind would blow it down on our troops and also on our allied nationals. And all of a sudden, we get people coming in having all kinds of problems with COPD, pneumonia, and lung cancer is going to be coming out soon. So there was a gent from Emory University in Georgia, and his name escapes me. I just can't think of it off the top of my head. Very nice man. We've corresponded with email. He goes and he finds the connection between all this, and he's working for the VA, and they say, no, don't you dare. You go in there and tell the Congress that there was no connection between burn pits and these other diseases. Well, he was a man of honor, so he resigned and went and told Congress the truth about what happened and also about the truth about what they tried to do to him. But that's typical of the VA.
Right.
Like I say, We refer to them as the Department of Veterans Abuse. They get upset at me when I do that.
Very appropriate. Very appropriate. I just want to remind our listeners, if you want to speak to our guests today, you have to call in and hit the number 1 immediately when Blog Talk answers. The number is 917-388-4520. And I say when they call, Blog Talk answers, hit number 1 immediately, and that will let me know you want to come on air. I'm getting more upset by the minute listening to this. I, you know, as bad as you think things are, at some point, people will come along and tell you things that you make you realize it's far worse than you ever expected.
This is the tip of the iceberg.
Marty, I would like to say something to everyone, because there might be people out there that say, hey, I'd like to look at that CDC report or whatever. I will give you my Blue Water Navy email address, and if anybody has any questions or if they want to help us in any way or if they need this information, they can easily contact me that way. That way they don't have to try to call you and look me up. And
sure.
My email is Sue, S-U-E, at bluewaternavy.org. Not .com, but .org. Blue Water Navy's all one word, .org. That way, if anything that we have said today they're interested in, or they want to help on my team to contact their senators, whatever, then they have a contact.
Excellent. Excellent.
Marty, one of the other things is what we've told you so far is the tip of the iceberg. There's toxic materials at Fort McClellan that have killed and are killing people. There's other Agent Orange that was used in Korea, Guam, Johnson Island, Thailand.
Oh, my God.
It was stored in the United States at Gulfport, Mississippi, and other places throughout the United States. We have PCBs. We have all kinds of things. Now, one of the things that Congress is trying to do is pass the Toxic Exposure Research Act, which will set up a research center of excellence at an existing VA facility. We're kind of, New Orleans would be a good choice because they've got the brand new hospital standing up there, which actually did not go $1 billion over.
Wow.
The budget. The director up there is a pretty good guy. I keep telling you, better be careful. They're going to fire him. He's too good. But
that toxic exposure bill is S-901.
Okay.
And S-901 and H.R. 1769. Okay.
Right.
And it's been incorporated in the Senate into the Veterans First Bill. So if people listening out there, call their senators and tell them to move the Veterans First Bill. That needs to go through before the end of the year.
Right. Well, it makes me angry.
When I
hear about you having to fight to get these bills passed, and yet we see, I follow a website that documents every bill that gets calendared. And when you see the idiotic crap that these people are wasting their times on, and then when I hear that money is supposedly the issue of why they can't address this and do anything about it, and we just sent $14 billion worth of foreign aid to Israel for God knows what reason, and we're doing all this other stuff, but we can't take care of these veterans? I've got a problem with that. This whole system is a disgrace. It's a disgrace. And it's got to stop. We should not have to battle Congress to make them do the right thing.
Well,
let me jump in with something here that John has indicated, but I think it needs to be further addressed, and that is when the just something as small as skin cells and such like that get exchanged, the amount of dioxin, TCDD, that is required to do what's called expose someone, a living organism, to the diseases that are possible. It's such a small amount that it's actually almost immeasurable. It's 1/10^15. That's a 1 with 15 zeros after it. It's such a small amount that, and this is a proven scientific medical fact that's all it takes. If that gets into the right cell of the right body, they're going to be sick.
And most reports say this: there is no safe level of dioxin.
No, there is exactly. I want to put something in here. I'm seeing a correlation between what's going on with the fight over genetically modified food. I live in a rural area. I'm surrounded by cornfields, bean fields, and dairy farms. Small community. We have entire family. I'm telling you, entire families wiped out from cancer here off these farms.
Yep.
From the use of these herbicides and pesticides containing dioxin. And I mean,
yep.
Whole families obliterated. And the number of them is staggering. We can't get anybody to pay any attention. But there is a correlation, I'm telling you, and I'm going to hunt it down, between why they won't recognize this with these veterans and what is happening with the food supply and this dioxin. This stuff is deadly. Apparently, it is saturating the world. From the way you're talking, there is no place safe from it.
That's right. And it's not just the isolated rural communities, because this, the food that's been created with this dioxin base to it is what gets shipped into the cities and other people eat it. And the residual background measurement of dioxin in the United States, any person you pick, has raised since 15-fold since the late 1960s until now. Everybody is being contaminated with dioxin, as well as other things.
Yes. Yes.
And you have to visualize this. You visualize Vietnam. And I'm not saying one or two times that bad things have been sprayed into the environment, like an oil spill that occurs once or whatever. This is 10 continuous years of spraying herbicides, napalm, malathion, you name it, all kinds of toxins. And you can't tell me that there is a barrier along the edge of that coastline that does not enter into the waterways.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and the thing is, too, it's like we know from here in Minnesota, which is where I am, land of 15,000 lakes and God knows how many rivers, we know that the water up here, all of it is contaminated with atrazine, glyphosate, nitrogen, among many other things, dioxin being a, none of the water up here is pure anymore, and they can't even filter it enough. So if this is what's happening here just from farming, what in the world is happening to Vietnam?
It's unbelievable. My wife was there a couple of years ago, and she said, you know, the ramifications of Agent Orange is still being felt. But what's bad is, there's still a lot of first-generation Agent Orange exposure, because the Agent Orange is still in the soil and in the water.
Do we have anybody that has any questions?
No, we don't have any. We got a board full of people listening by phone, I'll tell you that. But no, we don't have any flags up, but you've got a tremendous audience. So,
John Rossi,
go ahead.
JR. Are you there?
Yep.
Oh, you just mentioned to me today about the Oregon issue.
Brought up in the, I think it was October the 1st, article about how they had about 25,000, a little over 25,000 barrels of persistent organic pollutants, which is kind of a buzzword here because it's what defines what these toxic chemicals, herbicides and such are. It's a persistent organic pollutant. And this is up at Alkaline Lake in Oregon. They buried these 25,000 barrels back in 1976, and it's being detected in the groundwater of the local area up there now. This is about the same time things were going on in Vietnam. It's 40 years later. It's showing up in the water of one of our own states. People are going to start getting sick, and it's something that we're going to have to live through. Now, the Vietnam veterans have already lived through it, and they're dying because of it.
Yes.
This is just something that that we, the people of the United States, are going to be dealt with on a silver platter. And, you know, we the Vietnam veterans, are going to say, geez, we've been trying to tell you, it makes you sick. It kills you.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to be having the children of Vietnam vets coming on one of the shows here soon, and where the next generation is suffering from birth defects from Agent Orange. And in researching on that, what I found out is there is a huge movement in the scientific so-called community out there to try and minimize dioxin. Dioxin wasn't all that bad in and of itself. It's when you added other things to it, then it got bad. But by itself, it just, and this is what, and I thought, this is a propaganda campaign. Now, I'm no scientist, yep. So don't pretend to be, but this is a propaganda campaign. You watch and see, the harder you press to get these vets covered. And I'm going to be doing the research and putting together the correlation between that and what's happening out here in these rural areas to families that are dropping over dead from this stuff. And you watch and see the propaganda campaigns that come out trying to marginalize, minimalize, and make dioxin look like it's good for you. And I can guarantee you it'll happen. It just really, when you go to Congress, I need to ask Susie, John, Commander, one of you, all of you, when you go to Congress, why aren't these people outraged? I'm outraged listening to this. I'm just absolutely having a fit.
Many times they are. I mean, that's why we have so many co-sponsors. The biggest problem that I found was in educating the people, because there are so many bills. I think there's probably 10,000 bills been filed this Congress. And, you know, 5 years ago when we started doing this, nobody really knew anything about it. So, you know, and unfortunately, I don't live in Washington. I can only afford to go up there when Susie tells me to go up there. You know, it's, and I've got
now,
a day job. So
we're talking
I know.
To people our children's age.
That's
oh,
right.
My God.
Okay.
Think about that. When you're down there talking to liaisons, we're talking to folks down there that didn't live through it. Maybe their fathers or grandfathers
and,
or something.
And they don't know.
They don't understand,
and, so,
and
what,
it's not in the textbooks, and they're not aware of it. So I called one time, and they told me I had the wrong department on Agent Orange. I should be calling the agricultural department.
Yeah, that's the problem. They don't understand. You know, and I can probably count on one hand the number of times that I've actually been disrespected, okay, of all the offices up there, and there's 540 in the House, including the delegates, and 100 in the Senate. You know, that's not bad. They go in, they listen, they have the questions. Unfortunately, this pay-as-you-go bill has tied a lot of their hands. Otherwise, we'd have the thing done by now. But we're getting a lot of an awful lot of support, a groundswell of support. I mean, you know, we've got over 75% of the House and almost half the Senate that have signed on as co-sponsors, plus we have other people that are supporting it that aren't signed on as co-sponsors.
John, I think you're right about something here. I gotta say this. About those resolutions, they really are important, because what they're saying is the intent of Congress was to include them all. Now, if we get those two resolutions passed, then the cost, and we win that, then the cost of the bill is going to be minimal.
Let me put something
in
here. A friend of mine right here in Minnesota, Dan Martin, he's an accountant and a state planner. This man's life is numbers. Just sent me a message, and he said, your listeners might find it interesting to know that $1 billion over 10 years cost us $1.11 per family per year.
Yep.
So don't tell me we can't afford it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we can. That's not the problem. Yeah. The problem is the way that law laid down the restraints, it's just hard to do it. Now, again, if we win this court suit, then the money still has to be spent, but it's not considered new money. And I mean, it's just a knotwork up there.
Yes.
The problem is that although a lot of this stuff sounds silly, with 10,000 bills of Congress, you know, you need things to kind of, separate the wheat from the chaff. And by
yes.
the way, let me also say this. You've got one of our best allies in Congress is comes from Minnesota, and that's Tim Walz. He's just
yes.
a super individual, and he is. I've met with him, probably 6 or 8 times, and he just extremely good supporter of veterans. If he's listening, I want to give him a shout out and a thanks because he's just a great guy.
I'll send him a note. I can't tell you how much I appreciate all of you coming on today, and we've got to talk more because what we need is actual information. I know people want to concentrate on telling their story, the misery they've been through. We know the stories, and I'm not trying to marginalize you or minimize you or what you went through. That's not the intent. But we are at the point we need resolution. We need this.
We need action.
Yes.
What we
and
can
we
do.
Need,
and it,
yes. Go ahead.
If your listeners will do it, have them ask everybody they know. Put it on Facebook. Put it on Twitter. Put it on whatever you got. Call your local congressman, member of Congress, and both of your senators. Ask them to support House Concurrent Resolution 161, Senate Concurrent Resolution 51. Or H.R. 969 and S-681. And if you go to a website called congress.gov and put that information in, you can check and see whether or not your congressman and senator is a co-sponsor of the bills of the resolution. And the resolution is fairly recent.
They can also go to Fleet Reserve, don't forget, and those letters are pre-written for those folks, so you can just hit the button and it goes to both their congressman
That's
and their
right.
senator, too.
The Fleet Reserve Association, who's one of our biggest supporters, along with the Association of U.S. Navy. They've got I forget what they call it, CapWiz, I think it is, where you can actually take a pre-written letter and send it automatically to your member of Congress and your senators.
Can I tell you something about that? This is something I learned the hard way after 20-some years of doing all this. If you email, 9 times out of 10, it goes directly in the trash. It's not even read. If you snail mail, the same thing. And the thing you need to do is fax, because they have to keep it on record for 7 years for public viewing. You have to fax them. And don't use a template letter. Use it as a template, but write your own letter, because if they get multiple letters that are identical, they count them as one.
That's four.
Other thing is most of them have a website and a contact point on the website. And I will tell you, in going through there, I can always tell when a member of the senator's gotten a lot of correspondence, because they'll tell me. They'll say, man, we really was glad to hear from you, because we've been getting a lot of requests on this from the from the state, and it really does work. Contacting your member of Congress does work. The other thing is we do have, I know John Rossi's got some stuff for sale and accepts donations on his website, www.bluewaternavy.org. And we do as well, www.militaryveteransadvocacy.org. Let me emphasize that none of us accept salaries, okay? But we do like to get our expenses paid for, and unfortunately, hotels in D.C. are
expensive,
and it's too doggone cold to sleep on that park bench much longer.
And I'll add in, too, my email address is sue@bluewaternavy.org. That way, if anybody has questions, I can direct them the right source.
This has just been a wonderful show. Thank you. And I want you to consider coming back because, like I say, what we need is actual information. What can be done? What are you doing?
Right.
What's going on that you can join in on and actually become an activist for this on behalf of these people? I appreciate social networking sites in as much as it does get some attention to issues at hand. But as I've cautioned people for several years now, hitting like and share does not make you an activist. You have to get up on your feet. You have to make a phone call. You have to present yourself at a rally. I said you have to go see that senator, that representative. You have to arrange meetings, town hall meetings. You have to actually get up and do something. And you can start by making your phone calls, sending your emails, but then have a follow-up plan. Where are you going to go from there? And it's not enough to hit like and share and tweet.
Mm-hmm. Once you get at the town hall meetings, you know, we have a number of people at town hall meetings that say they have, you know, they raised the question. And, you know, it's really helped raise the issue with the member of Congress and the senator. So you really hit the nail on the head there.
That exactly is what happened with Vice Chair Bill Arrakis. Mike Comendis and myself went to that town hall meeting in Florida. That's how that happened.
Good for you.
Yeah,
so good for you.
He now works for Susie, too.
No, I just kind of – it's very hard to keep them all in line, but I do my best.
Apparently you're cracking the whip good.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about I would say, again, if you go to on Facebook, the Military Veterans Advocacy Facebook page, we try to keep it up to date with what's going on. So for it's a pretty good information source, not just on this but on other issues involving military and veterans.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
I want to thank
I got everything on my list, John.
And we did it in an hour.
Yes, we did.
We did it in an hour. But you guys have to agree to come back. We need you to come back and talk more about this.
Okay.
And Susie, I'll get with you and we'll get something set up. And when you aren't running Commander Wells to the North Pole or something.
Hey,
I
not a problem. I serve. I serve Susie Bellinger. She tells, I do. Okay.
Yep. And you'll be getting a Susie Graham soon.
Oh, thank you. Oh, you meant that for me, didn't you?
Yeah.
Oh, shoot.
That was really kind of funny. I'm up talking to the deputy staff director of the Senate Veterans Committee. He says, we got another Susie Graham on that issue, and apparently that's the nickname that the Hill is given
Susie
to Susie.
I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful.
Don't say that you can't still do grassroots operations in this country because you can't.
There you go. Well, we'll do whatever we can to help and support you. If you need airtime, you let me know. I'll make sure it happens, and we'll do whatever we can. I want to thank all of our guests today. Mr. Rossi, thank you for calling in. Susie Bellinger, Commander Wells, you were excellent guests. Thank you. And for everybody
for
that tuned
us.
In today, and we had a huge full board of phone people listening by phone. We had several in the chat room, but I can see already this show has topped over 20,000 listeners. So, and it hasn't hit archive yet. So I will give you numbers on that later on. We're doing good, and I'll try and get you all the exposure I can. Thanks, everybody, for tuning
in. Thank you, Marty. I appreciate it.
Thank you again.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye, Marty.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye, Marty.